From the ghetto in Nazi-occupied Poland to the concentration camps of Auschwitz-Birkenau and Sachsenhausen, American judge Thomas Bergenthal began life with all odds stacked against him. Yet his indomitable spirit pushed him through the Second World War and the atrocities of the Holocaust, in which 6 million Jews were systematically murdered. Judge Bergenthal, now 83, served at the International Court of Justice in The Hague, the UN Human Rights Committee, and was the first U.S. national to be elected to the Inter-American Court of Human Rights. The activist was in New York this week to deliver the keynote address at the UN's annual ceremony marking the International Day of Commemoration in memory of the victims of the Holocaust. Judge Bergenthal spoke to Liz Caffitti about how he survived the Auschwitz Death March and other horrors in the camps. He began by recounting a harrowing incident witnessed while just a child.
People who had escaped and brought back and hanged, with one of our people having to put the noose over the person's head, and it stayed with me. And I was, I think, 7 or 8 years old at the time in a work camp.
That teach you anything?
But the thing that I learned throughout the camp and it served me a lot was that I was fighting a battle against Hitler and I'm going to have to win it. It was that simple.
Do you have any recollection of the Auschwitz death march?
Oh yes, that was the worst experience. Of all camp experiences, that was the worst. Because it was in January of 1945, first walking 3 days in that cold without really the right clothes or anything. Anybody who sat down was immediately shot and body was pushed into the ditch. And so the walk was usually 10 hours a day. I lost some toes in the process. And then almost 10 days on open trains. By the time we got into the wagons, the train, you couldn't move. By the time we arrived, you could walk freely. People died. Bodies were thrown out.
Your language skills seem to have opened doors for you, both during and after the war. Can you talk about how you managed to, if I might use this expression, dodge a few bullets because you had skills where others didn't?
I spoke fluent German and Polish, a native, because my father and I spoke Polish. He was born in Poland, and my mother and I spoke German because she came from Germany. And it helped immensely, because the Nazis really couldn't quite understand that he was a child speaking the German of their children and didn't look like they thought Jews should look. So when I faced them, in one case I said to this, they're taking all the children away, and I said, Captain, I can work. He looked at me and he let me live, and they killed 30 children. And I still to this day, I wonder, what went through his head when he let me live? Was it because he thought of his own children if he had? Was it the language? I was helped a lot by many Poles. I was actually a mascot of the Polish army for a short period of time. So language helped is very, very useful.
After the war ended, did you know what happened to your family?
Well, I believed that my parents had to live and that they would find me. Unfortunately, my father died 3 months before the end of the war. My mother survived, and she never gave up looking for me. We were reunited 2 years after we were separated. I was in a Jewish orphanage in Poland. She looked all over for me, and everybody told her I couldn't possibly be alive. She never gave up. And she had a lot of organizations helping her to find me, but they didn't believe it was going to happen. And then at one place, the names crossed. I was planning to go to then Palestine, and she had written to that organization asking for help in finding me, and the two names suddenly appeared on the desk before Confucius. Can you imagine? Hundreds and thousands of people were looking to reunite their lost families and hear the name.
In 1951, as a 17-year-old, you sailed to the United States, where again you used your language ability to translate messages on the ship.
Well, I should tell you that one reason I used my language skills, because everybody had to work, and I decided I wasn't going to paint the ship with it. So it was much easier to make announcements and go on deck there were some interesting people. Karl Marx, for example, from parts of Russia, refugees from all over Europe, and I enjoyed it there. And then we were confronted with American food. They gave us cereal, and we didn't know how to eat it in these packages. So all of us thought it was some dessert, and we were all carrying it around on the ship eating it.
That worked too, right?
Yeah. And to this day, I can't eat sweet potatoes because I thought that they were carrots.
Living in New Jersey, you got a scholarship to Bethany College,
right,
and later one to NYU. What prompted you to study law?
Well, my father had studied law, and I thought with my languages, my background, I could do something in law that other lawyers probably could not do. I had this sense that it was an area where I could help more people than they would be able to do, and that's why I did it, and it sort of always continued. When I was still at NYU, I decided I was going to focus on international law. But in those days, NYU had very few courses in the field. So that's why I applied to Harvard and got in.
And all of this on scholarships?
All of this on scholarships. And I graduated without any debt at all. That would be impossible to do.
When did you set your goals on becoming a judge?
Never really. My first judgeship was from Costa Rica, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, and I was called by the ambassador. I was teaching at Texas at the time, and he said that the government of Costa Rica would be honored if I accepted their nomination, a judge on the first Inter-American Court of Human Rights. I thought my students were playing games with me, so I had to first make sure that the telephone call actually came from the Costa Rican embassy.
And it did.
It did, and that was a marvelous experience for 12 years. On the International Court of Justice, I never really thought I would get it, because usually the U.S. would nominate people who worked for the State Department or the Justice Department, and I had never done that. I was called by the legal advisor, who says, "You are one of the few people in this group who never bothered to apply, to say they were interested. Are you interested?" I said, "What international lawyer would not be interested?" So I was eventually nominated, in part because I had the other judicial experience.
Your reputation preceded you.
Yes, and the fact that I could get along with different people in different courts. Again, language and being interested in people from different parts of the world.
And what about human rights? Were you always interested
in human rights? Was from the very beginning. As a matter of fact, with my Harvard professor, we wrote the first American casebook on international human rights in 73, when nobody really knew anything about the field.
And we had the International Court of Justice. Did you ever have to settle any disputes regarding the Holocaust?
I had a strange experience with the Holocaust, and I served on the UN Human Rights Committee. When a Holocaust denier from France appealed to the committee against a decision against him in France, because he said he was convicted in France because he denied the Holocaust and that was a violation of his rights. He denied that Auschwitz was really a death camp, etc. And so I recused myself, and I said, as the survivor of Auschwitz, whose family died, and I couldn't participate, which was much more effective than if I had participated. The entire committee ruled against him.
How many grandchildren do you have?
We have 9.
And what advice do you give to them about your experiences?
I try to do very little advice. But I think that the big thing is to be honest, which is very important to children, and to do things that they believe in, not to be afraid, which to me is one of the big things.